Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
On the latest episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry, I'm delighted to be joined by trichologist Claire Fulham, chatting all things hair loss.
I remember then going, I'm losing a bit more hair. Like, I could see hair everywhere. It was all over my desk and work everywhere. And so I went to my GP. She found five big patches on my scalp, one the size of my fist. So I was like, right, what am I going to do about this? Give me a plan. She just looked me dead in the eye and said, there's nothing you can do. I went on list for dermatologists. She had a cancellation and she very quickly said, yes, you have alopecia areata.
As ever, available on all podcast platforms.
Seachtain, an Indo Askeliga.
Lower and once you're in a Elner Donaldson Lish and Ifigoxin, I can hear Lower Jeffrey the Dinnerby.
Ni Heg will in policy Seachtain, Ian Vodayanu and Avira Listad occur Lishna Bodge Fogashoot.
Skilty, Fis, Turmi.
Ni Mujigiri in Dram Honyal Ama, Ta Mujigiri Mujhain Honyal Ista.
Seachtain, find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Migration is once again the political hot potato of the moment. This week, the under-pressure Justice Minister Helen McEntee has been engaged in a tit-for-tat battle with the British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak.
If people come to our country illegally but know that they won't be able to stay, they're much less likely to come.
Ireland's worst diplomatic spat since Brexit has developed over an increasing number of migrants who are entering the country from Northern Ireland.
Last week, the Minister for Justice, Helen McEntee, said that more than 80% of people seeking asylum in Ireland were entering the country through Northern Ireland.
And the source of the issue? The UK's increasingly controversial Rwanda plan.
Human rights groups and the United Nations Refugee Agency have condemned this programme, calling it cruel, inhumane and illegal.
Today, the Irish government is scrambling to find a way to send migrants back to the UK, with talk of Gardaí being redeployed to the border. But the UK government, with one eye on an upcoming election, says it's not interested in an asylum seeker deal with Ireland.
They're rubbing their hands with glee because they think that, you know, even if it's a dozen asylum seekers who've gone to Belfast and got a bus to Dublin, for them that's a win.
I'm Ellen Coyne, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Gabia Gadavets-Gaita, political correspondent with the Irish Independent, and Enda Brady, broadcaster with TRT World, to discuss the unfolding immigration row between Ireland and the UK. So, Enda, this is a little bit complicated, but I'm wondering, is there a simple way for you to be able to explain this row that's broken out between the UK and Ireland over immigration?
Yes, so the UK government has absolutely put all its chips on this Rwanda policy working. So the Brits are getting 45,000 people coming on the small boats from northern France year on year, between 40 and 45,000 every year, immediately claiming asylum. Now, they're getting into the UK illegally. It's costing about north of 4 million euros a day in hotel accommodation. And there's a big backlash.
Just been handed details of the latest polling done by YouGov. I mean, I can't believe these figures. Is this right? Is this a late April Fool's?
Labour is poised to take 403 seats, Tories reduced to 155. That therefore equates to a majority for Labour of 154.
The Conservative Party, they've got an election coming up at some point this year, whether it's summer or October. Sunak needs a big win, and the Rwanda policy is designed to basically punch through with the British public and show them that Sunak is a serious Prime Minister, tackling the issues and basically making the UK a very hostile place for asylum seekers to come. And in a nutshell, people who are now arriving in the UK are thinking, well, hang on, I don't have come all the way from sub-Saharan Africa, get to the UK and be flown back to Africa. Maybe I'll go to Belfast and drive down south and claim asylum there.
It started, I suppose, last week when our Justice Minister, Helen McEntee, made a comment about the number of immigrants that were coming over the border into the Republic. Is that right?
The Irish government is claiming that 80% of asylum seekers getting into the Republic are coming in via the north. Now, they've not actually backed this up with the actual numbers. We don't know how many people have claimed asylum this way because, of course, the border isn't monitored. I mean, you know, trying to explain this to an international audience this week on TV and radio, telling them that, well, that there is a border and there isn't a border, and that you can just drive across and the only thing you notice is miles to kilometres and a few little road markings and paintings and what have you. It's difficult, but that's essentially what's happening. Helen McEntee said what she said. Micheál Martin followed up then, and he backed up what she said. And the mother of all rows is now brewing between Dublin and London over what to do, because Sunak says he's not going to back down. The Irish government wants these migrants and asylum seekers taken back to where they came from, i.e. the UK. And Sunak is saying there's no way Britain will take people back from Ireland when France has refused to take people back from where they've come.
Jad Al-Hamani is from Jordan, flew from London to Belfast a few weeks ago, then got a bus from there to Dublin across Ireland's frictionless border.
I didn't stay in the UK because I've been told that they will send me to Rwanda.
So it's this kind of bizarre merry-go-round, but I think it has the potential to cause a lot of problems.
And we will talk in more detail about what the Irish government is trying to do in terms of this emergency legislation to kind of send people back over the border. But I'm really interested, when this row broke out this week, you know, you had ministers saying they weren't going to show up to meetings and kind of snubs on either side. Like, we tend to care a lot about what happens in the UK and really follow the news over there. But does anyone over there care about their government having a row with Ireland?
I think Conservative supporters are really pleased with this. I think the right-wingers of the Conservative Party, who are getting increasingly powerful and cocky, even despite the fact they're heading for electoral obliteration when the general election comes, they're happy about this because they see that the policy is having an effect.
Welcome back to State of the Nation. So, despite the fact that for years we've been told by the Labour Party that the Rwanda plan won't work and won't serve as a viable deterrent, although they couldn't provide any alternative deterrent themselves, in 1 week, just 1 week, since the bill received royal assent, before flights have even been scheduled, the deterrent is taking effect.
They've been told for years that this policy was illegal, it infringed people's human rights. You know, we've still not seen a single asylum seeker actually go to Rwanda. 450 million quid has gone to the Rwandan government, and the only three people who've gone to Rwanda have all been Home Secretaries, Priti Patel, Suella Braverman, and James Cleverly. And look, it's playing into the hands of the right-wingers who, on the face of it, would have absolutely no love for Ireland or Irish people and no interest in anything good for Ireland. And they're rubbing their hands with glee because they think that, you know, even if it's a dozen asylum seekers who've gone to Belfast and got a bus to Dublin, for them, that's a win.
Is there a bit of a hangover from Brexit here when relations between the UK and Ireland weren't great?
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head, Ellen. So there's a lot of laughter in the UK Brexit circles, I noticed this week, that, you know, they were quite angered that Ireland and the Dublin government had played hardball over the border and got their way. And the fact that there is no physical border and the watchtowers and all of that and security never came back. And they're now laughing and saying, oh, the irony. I mean, I've been online this week and I've seen some of the online commentary, tweets of delight saying, oh, be careful what you wish for. Now the Irish will be happy they've got no border. Look what's happening. Asylum seekers pouring in. So there's been a bit of schadenfreude, to use that German word, you know, laughing at someone else's problems this week. But like, make no mistake, the Rwanda policy, I don't think it'll ever get off the ground. They're saying flights will happen in 12 weeks' time. Well, that takes us towards August. There's likely to be an election the end of September, possibly October 24th. Labour are going to scrap it anyway. Labour will win the next election here if you believe the polls. So it's dead in the water. So they've had a little kind of fillip of positivity this week at Ireland's expense.
And you mentioned, obviously, the Tories have one eye on that general election. They also have local elections coming up this week as well. If you're the Prime Minister, you must be delighted with this.
I think Sunak will be pleased. But look, they're going to get their backside kicked Friday morning when the results come in from all of the local elections on Thursday, Conservatives predicted to lose half their seats. And that's at a local level. And I think when you go out and talk to people, like I live in rural Oxfordshire and I'm talking to people every day. I'm around this country. I'm in London. I'm in various different towns and cities. When you talk to people, are they interested in the Rwanda policy and migration? Categorically, the top three issues, cost of living crisis, mortgages and interest rates, and the National Health Service. And I would say asylum seekers and migration way, way down the line. People are concerned about the money in their pockets or lack of.
So Enda has set the scene there for us on the situation in the UK. Gabby, this has obviously exploded in Ireland. It's dominated the political agenda so far this week, and it's certainly dominated the cabinet meeting today. We have Helen McEntee saying that we have now a significant proportion of people claiming international protection coming over the border with Northern Ireland. What is the situation in terms of the Irish government? Is it legal and possible for them to send those international protection applicants back to the UK?
So in short, it isn't. And that's exactly what Cabinet signed off on today to make changes to. So there was this agreement with the UK from the year 2020, but it hasn't been utilised in recent times because there was a High Court ruling last month which deemed the way that Ireland designated UK to be a safe country to be against EU laws. So that's what Cabinet this morning signed off on, to get around that ruling so that people who are coming over from the UK, asylum seekers, can be brought back. Now, exactly what the law is going to do is it's going to designate the UK a safe country. When a country is designated as safe, any applicants that are coming from that country, they are processed faster. So it makes it a bit easier, I suppose, on some level for officials to get their application processed. It's still a lot of work and they have to work faster, but their application is processed faster. They get a decision quicker. So that means that if they are to be deported, they are deported, or if they need international protection, they can receive that protection as appropriate instead of, you know, spending months and months, if not even years sometimes, in state accommodation waiting for an answer.
And we've seen relations between the Irish and UK government diplomatically have gotten a little bit sour over this. Rishi Sunak has been giving interviews to the UK press where he's saying that he has no interest in making an arrangement with Ireland.
You get a return scheme with Ireland, do you think?
I'm not interested in that. We're not going to accept returns from the EU via Ireland when the EU doesn't accept returns back to France where illegal migrants are coming from. Of course we're not going to do that.
The tone that he's setting is that these international protection applicants will not be able to be sent back to the UK. Is that going to cause hassle?
So Rishi Sunak is taking this as a little bit of a win because he's saying, here's an example of Ireland. Ireland is seeing this influx of migrants coming in, but actually that's evidence that our policy is working. The way it's being viewed in the Irish government circles is that, you know, the UK are electioneering and we're not taking it very seriously. However, there is a serious question there to be asked if, you know, even if we designate the UK a safe country, as the laws now will be very quickly drafted to do so, if we are trying to deport people back, is it to the UK or is it just up across the border to Belfast or the six counties? How exactly is that going to work? And if we are, for example, chartering flights, as Helen McEntee has said that she's willing to do for migrants coming from other countries, what if London says we're not going to let them land on our soil? So there has to be, I suppose, a little bit of cooperation on both sides. We don't need their permission to implement our migration policies. And in time, Helen McEntee is going to have her meeting with the UK counterpart, James Cleverly. Yes, he did snub her on Monday, but eventually it will happen. And they're viewing that these wrinkles will be ironed out in time.
The UK government, in choosing Brexit, chose to go it alone on migration. What they've actually seen since then is an increase in people seeking asylum in their country. Their policies are their policies.
And you mentioned that snub for Helen McEntee that attracted a lot of coverage and attention and probably wasn't great for the Justice Minister. And then later on Monday, there was a lot of attention as well put on this 80% figure. So this whole row started when the Justice Minister gave that figure last week that 80% of new international protection applicants were coming over the border. And then there seemed to be a suggestion that Micheál Martin was maybe questioning the accuracy or the basis of that figure. Is that right?
Yes. So a lot of the migrant rights groups came out and said, well, where is this figure coming from? What kind of data are the Department of Justice looking at? And can that data be published? Tánaiste Micheál Martin said that actually it's not really based on scientific evidence per se. It's based mostly on the experiences of civil servants who are working at IPAS centres, and the data is not stored per se. This is very much so based on anecdotal evidence. There's not hard line facts here.
We've mentioned it here a few times, and even the Taoiseach Simon Harris, I think, made a comment about it going into cabinet that the Tories have their eye on an election, and this is obviously a big political issue over there. This is probably going to emerge as a big election issue over here as well, isn't it?
It was interesting. I was speaking to sources at an EU level last night, and they were making the point that actually for the longest time, for most of the countries in the EU, housing and migration has been the two biggest issues. And it's only now really that Ireland is catching up. In that sense, we are seeing immigration. It's not maybe the top issue, but it is one of the most important issues among the cost of living crisis, health and housing when it comes to opinion polls, for example. So I think migration is going to be a really big focal point ahead of the next local and European elections on June 7th. And then whenever a general election is called as well. Of course, we're seeing on the Irish side this inability to accommodate people in suitable accommodation. Roderick O'Gorman, the Green Party minister, he's taken a lot of flack on this. He's building these accommodation centres. He's been accused of not releasing the locations of those accommodation centres ahead of the next elections, but perhaps maybe afterwards. So there is a political football, and it is set to stay that way for the time to come.
Ireland has seen increasing protests by groups opposed to refugees in their areas. This was a demonstration against a site for Ukrainian refugees. But there have also been arson attacks on asylum seeker accommodation and even riots in Dublin sparked by false rumours about asylum seekers. So the Irish government is under pressure to act.
And you explained to us earlier on that this is obviously a really attractive policy, that Conservative ministers love being able to talk about it. But in real terms, yourself and I think a lot of other analysts wouldn't predict that it's actually going to result in a lot of people being sent back to Rwanda. But I'm interested in, the merit of the policy itself. I understand it's come under some very sharp criticism from NGOs and human rights groups and opposition MPs. Is it kind of accepted by the UK government, or is it being put forward by the UK government, that Rwanda is a safe country?
Well, when you look at Ellen, they had to actually go through their own court system and then get it voted through Parliament and change legislation to have the Safety of Rwanda Bill. So to convince people that sending people to Rwanda is actually safe. And a lot of charities and NGOs are extremely concerned about this. They say that in no way is Rwanda safe, because if someone's application for asylum in the UK is rejected, they're then stuck in Rwanda. And is Rwanda going to repatriate them to their home country? Are they going to be left there? And some of these people will be claiming asylum for political reasons, religious reasons. They could be people who could be persecuted if they're sent home because they're gay. You know, there's an absolute legal minefield here. And I confidently predict that come the first flights, when we start hearing that people have been selected and that they're going to be flying from London to Kigali and that this is going to happen, really top lawyers will get involved and they will take this act apart because of the human rights situation. And I'll be amazed if flights get off before the UK election when it comes.
We've had a lot of situations over the past few years, particularly since Brexit, where the Irish and UK government have been, you know, things have been terse or things have been sour. But in the past, when Ireland came out on top in these diplomatic rows, we might have had the might of the EU behind us. When you come to an issue like this, where it's just kind of a bilateral thing, does Ireland have any hope of winning this row?
I think it depends what you think a win looks like. Sunak will be gone. He is in the last months of being Prime Minister. And I think when Keir Starmer comes in from Labour, Starmer will want to build relations in Europe. certainly build relationships in Ireland and undo some of the damage that many people feel the Conservatives have inflicted on the UK for 14 years now. And in years to come, people will look back and think, can you believe this is what the UK wanted to do? And it will be looked upon with shame.
And Gabby, we've mentioned that sometimes the UK government enjoys getting into these rows with Ireland because it plays well with their base. But there have been times in the fact when the Irish government has been very popular with voters here for taking a strong stance against the UK government. Would that happen here? Or do you think that Simon Harris and Helen McEntee would be nervous of being seen to be softer on immigration than the UK government is?
So it was interesting. I was speaking to coalition TDs last night and one of them said, if the Brits are refusing to speak to you, you know you're doing something right. So I think that paints a little bit of a picture. But in fairness, ministers do acknowledge privately that we do need to have good relations with the UK. I mean, they're our closest neighbour. Yes, they're not in the EU anymore and that makes things very complicated. But we have to be seen to be pushing for Ireland at the same time. And I think that's exactly what's going on here. I think Simon Harris, ever since he's taken up as Taoiseach, he's had this very reasonable, common sense, statesman-like feel about him. And he is not going to want to be seen to be arguing with anybody, especially not Ireland's closest neighbour, in the few months that he has as Taoiseach, certainly before Ireland indeed goes to the polls as well in a general sense. So I think he'll have to try and weather the storm. Helen McEntee, you know, speaking as she was going into cabinet this morning, she was saying, look, we're going to have to close the loopholes and we're going to have to implement our own migration policies. And that's all fair enough. But you know, advisors in the background, they do know that we are going to have to keep good relations with the UK because it's unavoidable to have anything else.
And my many thanks to Gabia and to Enda. I'm Ellen Coyne, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was recorded by Gavin Hennessy, produced by Ian Doyle, and researched by Keane O'Brien, with sound design by John Smith. Archive clips from The Indo Daily, The Irish Independent, ITV News, CBS News. If you like The Indo Daily, follow us and leave a review.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920, there's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.